Welcome everyone to our boot camp preparing for the Certified Diabetes Educator Exam. This is our class 4. This is our special insulin and pattern management class where we really dig down and look at insulin dosing, insulin patterns. We look at carb ratios, correction factors, and insulin sensitivity. We're going to be doing a lot of case studies today and really applying our knowledge. Because as you know on the exam, it's application of knowledge, and they are going to give you questions that give a case study, a vignette. And I do want to say, if I haven't said this already, that the vignettes that they give you are often very wordy and lengthy, and they're going to require that you kind of drill down to the most important information and really address that. So be ready for that. It takes time to read through, but what they're trying to assess in this exam is your ability to assess patients. Because as you know, patients come into us, they have a lot of information to share. How do we sort through all that information and really help patients move to a better place in their diabetes care? And the exam, in their own way, is trying to replicate that. So get a great night's sleep the night before the exam. Be really ready. Know where the exam location is. And be confident. You know, walk in there with a strut, knowing that you've really worked hard to get to this point. And so here's just some information I always have on your slides about this, the administrative aspects. This is handout 4. This is boot camp 4, and the handouts are included in your online courses and on your resource page. I do stay afterward to answer questions. Within 4 hours of recording this, I will have the show up and ready on your online university. Then you just can go there, take the quiz, add survey, and get your CE certificates. So here's where we left off with our patient last time, and we were looking at patterns for him. So let's just kind of dig in where we left off. This gentleman is on H, which stands for Humalog, which is a bolus insulin, and he takes 7 of H, 5 of H, 8 of H at meals, and 22 of Detemir at night. You can see he never adjusts his insulin. He just takes the same dose regardless of what he's eating or what his blood sugars are. And the thing we were talking about last time is that obviously his blood sugars in the morning are below target. Our target range is 80 to 130. He reaches that target once, but all the other blood sugars are below target. And we determined that the cause of that was too much basal insulin at night. And using our ADA algorithm, we determined we reduce the basal by 4 units to help get blood sugars in the morning to a higher level. So we're going to go to 18 of Detemir at night, and we're going to see if we can't get that morning blood sugars up. But the thing about this that is perplexing is that his morning blood sugars are chronically low. We're going to fix that. His lunch blood sugars are in target, 80 to 130. His dinner blood sugars, the target's 80 to 130. He's never in range. And so I asked this patient, you know, where do you get your insulin dosing strategies from? And he said, well, I made it up myself. And he used to see an endocrinologist 20 years back, but he lost touch with that endocrinologist. He moved, and so he's been trying on his own to adjust his insulin. And I know you've met patients like that. They're trying their very best to make changes in their insulin therapy to get to target, but they don't have the information needed to succeed. So while we appreciate that he's trying to succeed at getting his blood sugars to target, we can see he needs a little coaching and a lot of love. So I want to give you some insulin dosing strategies. And this is called the 50-50 rule. It's just like thinking like a pancreas using math. And we've seen this number in one of our previous poll questions. People with diabetes need about 0.5 to 1 units of insulin per kilogram per day. That's just a common starting point. I put here 0.5 units per kilogram is the most common place we would start. It's conservative and we can always go up. So the 50-50 rule says we base their insulin needs on body weight, and then we give half of it basal. So 50% of the total is basal, which could be glargine once a day, sometimes Detemir once a day, but MPHOEs twice a day. And then we have the other 50% is a bolus insulin. And the bolus insulin then is divided into 3 meals. Well, what does that look like? For example, a patient weighs 50 kilograms. So we say 50 times 0.5, they get 25 total units of insulin a day. But we can't inject that all at once, so we divide it into two different dosing strategies. One is a basal dose and the other is a bolus dose. So the basal dose then is about 50% of 25, which is 12.5. But we don't generally recommend 12.5 units. Our syringes usually are only on 1 unit increments. So we give the basal a little bit more. The basal dose then is 13 units a day, and it might look like glargine 13, or you might have to split up MPH or Dedamir. And the other 50% is our bolus dose, 12 units. Again, we don't give that at one sitting. We break it up into 3 meals. So 12 divided by 3 meals would be 4 units at each meal. So that's the 50-50 dosing strategy. Very common use formula, and I use it all the time. My patients come in, they're on insulin, and I'm trying to figure out where should they be landing. And I'll use this rule to give me a framework. And based on that framework, I can help make some changes. So let's give you all a minute to do a fill in the blanks here. What if the patient weighed 80 kilograms? He weighs 80 kilograms times 0.5. And then what would be the basal dose and what would be the bolus dose? So I'm going to be quiet for a moment and go ahead and let you fill in the blanks for yourself, and then we'll come back together and go over this. So when you go to the exam, make sure that you have a scratch piece of paper and pencil, because there might be some math equations that you'll need to do. They probably won't ask you to do this equation. This equation is really for your own knowledge, but it does help as a framework. And they might say on the exam, the patient uses a 50-50 rule to dose insulin. They might reference this rule. Okay, let's go ahead and see if your answers match my answers. So we said 80 times 0.5 is 40 units of insulin a day. So that's his total daily dose. And even when patients walk in to see me, I'll add up their insulin and I'll say, how much insulin are they on relative to their body weight? I want to see if they're right around 0.5 or are they on, 1 unit of insulin per kilogram per day. Maybe they're very resistant. So I'm going to just kind of get a guesstimate of that. His basal dose would be half of the total, which is 20, and that might be Lantus or Glargine at bedtime, or maybe we do a BID-NPH. The bolus dose is the other 20. So you can't divide 20 exactly into 3, so you would give it 2 sevens, which would be 14 and a 6, for a total of 20. And that would be per meal. So you would give the 7 and the 7 at the larger meals and the 6 at a smaller meal. So here's that same guy we just took a look at. He weighs 80 kilograms, 80 times 0.5 is 40, 40 units. Half of 40 is 20. So that's what we did. We gave him 20 units of Dedamir at bedtime. Now, as I mentioned before, the other 20 is divided into 3 meals. Here's 7, 7, and 6 for a total of another 20. So we just use this formula to adjust his insulin a little bit. And by doing that, look what happens to his blood sugars. Let's take a look at, I'm going to come to breakfast in a minute, but let's take a look at lunch. Our lunch blood sugar target is 80 to 130. We are always there. Our dinner blood sugar target is 80 to 130. We're always there except for, wait, what happened here? So is that a pattern, this 208? Nope, it's not a pattern. This 208 actually is what I would call a teaching opportunity. Because when he has 208 at dinner, we have to find out what happened at lunch. So this to me is a birthday cake, it's a party, it's an oops, I forgot my insulin. I don't know, it could be a variety of things. So we just want to say, hey, I noticed you're 208 here. Let's figure out what happened at lunch to see if we can prevent that in the future. And then let's take a look at bedtime. Bedtime target is less than 180. Again, he's just a little bit above a few times. That doesn't mean we change insulin. That means we look at getting out and walking after dinner or looking at the carb intake at dinner time. So when you see these numbers, I don't want you to change insulin based on a few of these. We're going to do everything we can to modify lifestyle first. Let's take a look at his morning. His morning blood sugar target is 80 to 130. You can see at day one breakfast, 84, 81, 79, 69. So this is a different kind of pattern. This is a sequential pattern where it's getting lower every day. When I see that, I know that day five is going to be even lower. And so this requires action. Now, what is the culprit? Why is he going too low at breakfast time? What insulin is making that happen? Exactly. It's the detemir at night. The basal insulin affects fasting. Too much basal means too low of fasting. Well, you may say to me, well, Bev, we use the formula. It should work. Yeah, the formula is working so good. We're in the sweet spot of what his insulin needs are. We finally have refueled his body with insulin in a way that is really working. And you'll see this a lot. When you get to that sweet spot, blood sugars just trend down. So cut back on insulin. It's okay. So what we're going to do for that detemir now is go to four. We're going to decrease it by 4 units. Yes, I am very aggressive because I want to see what is the least amount of insulin this patient needs. I'm going to go down to 16 units of detemir, and let's see what his morning blood sugars come in. I mean, they're probably going to come in the hundreds, which is absolutely perfect. And so we want to make sure they're safe overnight, and we always want to give the least amount of insulin to get blood sugars to target. So this is part of a really important part of what we do, regardless of our profession. If we're diabetes educators, we look at patterns. We identify where it's running too low. That's always number one. We look at those numbers that are standout, elevated blood sugars. And then we're going to coach patients. We're going to help them make lifestyle changes. And we're going to suggest to providers changes in insulin dose to keep our patients safe. That's such a critical part and part of our advocacy role and part of our intervention role. We're always looking at these logs to help patients have the best quality of life possible. So we're coaches for our patients. So let's take a look at Calvin. Calvin takes 5 units of regular insulin before breakfast and dinner and 18 units of Lantus at bedtime. His morning blood sugars range from 143 to 172. What is the best action? ? Is it A, increase dinner regular from insulin to 6 units? Is it B, decrease bedtime Lantus by 2 units? Is it C, increase Lantus dose at bedtime? Or is it D, evaluate him for Somogyi effect? So let me go ahead and launch this poll and see what you come up with. All right, thanks for voting, everyone. All right, take a few more seconds. You might be asking, will they ask these kind of questions on the exam? Absolutely. They're going to give you a situation where the patient's on insulin and give some blood sugars and say, what would be the best action or what action would we suggest to providers? Okay, I'm going to close this poll, you guys. Thank you. So let's just go over this together. He's on Lantus at bedtime. His morning blood sugars are 143 to 172. What is the best action? So we know his blood sugars are too high in the morning. What insulin affects morning blood sugars? The Lantus, the basal. So that's in our mind as we are. So you want to kind of think through this question before you start looking at the answers. So you know morning blood sugar is too high. Lantus is involved in the answer to this probably in some way. Let's see what happens. A, will we increase the dinner insulin to 6? No, nobody. Let me just share what you all chose. Nobody chose that. That doesn't even make sense. So good job. So you get rid of wrong answers first. It's always what you want to do. So 8% of you said decrease the Lantus at night by 2 units. So let's just think about that. If we decrease the Lantus, his morning blood sugars might go even higher. So we don't want to decrease the Lantus. That would be the wrong answer. So we're looking for the best answer. We don't always maybe have a right answer, but there's a best answer. So based, and this is really important because I think I know what you guys are thinking about. You have to base it on the information at hand. You cannot read anything into it, okay? You can only use the information they give you. So don't add any extra stories or Signs or symptoms, just use what you have. Okay, so A, B is not the right answer. C, 67% of you chose that. That is the right answer, but I know why some of you chose D. But C is the right answer based on what information we have. Morning blood sugars are elevated. We increase the Lantus dose. It doesn't say by how much. It's kind of vague, but we know that is going to be the most helpful thing to help get those morning blood sugars down. Now, 25% of you chose D, and I know why you chose it. You said, evaluate for Somogyi effect. Now, what, and they throw this word Somogyi in there because they make it a juicy answer. They're going to give you juicy answers that you're going to want to choose because it has those words in there that you're kind of on the lookout for. So Somogyi means, as you know, you get low blood sugar, and then you have rebound hyperglycemia. The reason that is not the right answer is because in the question, they never say, I'm going to hide this, they never say, oh, he was waking up with a headache or he had night dream, you know, vivid nightmares. They never give us any indication that he was going low in the middle of the night. If it was looking for Somogyi, they would have given us that indication. So C is the best answer using the information that we have. All right? Okay, thanks. Let's keep going on. But as I've said, if you don't get the right answer, it's okay. It's just information for us to kind of be on a lookout for certain aspects of test taking. Based on Mr. R's clinical picture in the hospital, how much insulin is needed? So we're talking about insulin needs, and we have this scale, 0.5 to 1 units of insulin per kilogram, but that's not always true for all people. Look at this. His creatinine is 1.6, so he's not going to be clearing insulin as readily because insulin is reabsorbed by the kidneys. He's older. He's not really that hungry. Look at, he's really lean. BMI of 21. He weighs 80 kilograms. And he's in the hospital right now, but at home, normally he only takes Glucotrol 5 milligrams. That's a really relevant fact because if you look at your medication pocket card, you'll see that for Glucotrol, the max dose is 40 milligrams. And that's a sulfonylurea. He's only at 5 milligrams, so he's on a very low dose, and look what his A1C is, 7.2, very close to target. So this gives us a lot of information about him. He's insulin sensitive, and he doesn't need much medication to get his blood sugars to target. When patients come in the hospital, we often take them off their oral meds and put them on insulin. We want to make sure that we don't over-insulinize him. So based on the unique characteristics of the patient, where would you start? Body weight in kilograms times, now I told you 0.5 to 1 unit of units of insulin per kilogram per day, but really it goes the other way on the continuum. Very insulin sensitive people, we can go to 0.3 units per kilogram. That's for thin, elderly, and those with elevated creatinine. So for this situation, I would say, sorry, I don't have my answer slide here, so hang on for me. It's body weight in kilograms. He's 80 kilograms times 0.3. He needs 24 units of insulin a day, 24 units. That is his total insulin needs a day. If we did 80 times 0.5, that would be 40 units a day. It's too much based on his clinical picture. So that's just good information to know. But now I want to ask you a question. We have a 76-year-old patient who weighs 80 kilograms. He needs 0.3 units of insulin per kilogram, just like what we talked about. Using the 50-50 formula, what would be his mealtime bolus? Would it be 3 units at meals, 4 units at meals, 12 units, or would we base his mealtime bolus on the sliding scale? So let me go ahead and launch this and see what you come up with. All right. I thought this was going to be a really challenging question, but no, you guys are getting the answer right on the money. Maybe you're looking a slide ahead. Hopefully not. I'm just going to assume that you just got this concept, the 50-50 concept. So awesome. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and close this poll and share it with you. So no one chose the wrong answer. 100% of you chose 4 units. Great job, everybody. So what I was trying to do is just have you do a quick calculation in your head. He weighs 80 kilograms times 0.3. He needs 24 units a day. 24 units is his total needs. Half of that would be basal, half would be bolus. So what's half of 24? 12. So 12 units basal, and the other 12 units is bolus. And then you take the 12 units bolus divided by 3 meals is 4 units at each meal. What if he's nauseated? This is just a question for our own discussion. If he's nauseated, would you give that insulin before he eats? He's like, I don't know if I'm going to eat. I'm really nauseated. He's due for 4 units. What would you do? Well, I don't have a poll question on this, but I would definitely consider giving him insulin after meals. That would be a special situation where I would say, you know what? You're not sure if you're going to eat. I understand that. Go ahead and eat what you can, and then we'll give your insulin after meal based on what you've eaten. And I think that's a very appropriate recommendation for inpatients, but also for outpatients. If our patients are sick or nauseated, they may need to adjust their insulin, and sometimes they might have to take it after meals, making sure that they got some carbohydrate in. Okay, so now we're going to move on to our second half, our basal bolus section, where we'll get more into carb counting and correction scales and so forth. So we're going to talk about carb counting, prandial coverage, correcting for hyper and hypoglycemia. And I just Googled images for counting, and this image came up, and I thought, this is really fun. And then I realized that was counting crows. So that's what that image is all about. That will not be on the exam, by the way. Okay, so bolus basics. Now we're back to bolus insulin. There's carbohydrate or prandial coverage, and that matches the insulin to the carbs. Generally, we'll say 1 unit for 15 grams. That's a very common starting point. We might adjust that based on the patient's response. And then there's also an addition to the carb or prandial coverage, and they might refer to it either way in this on the exam, carbohydrate coverage or prandial coverage. It just means covering for foods, covering for carbs. There's also a correction bolus. This correction bolus is not just, it doesn't live on its own. It's an addition to the prandial. So it targets hyperglycemia. And as I've mentioned before, there's a range, 1 unit for every 30 to 50 points over target. And that number really is based on the patient's sensitivity to insulin. And we do adjust ratios depending on sensitivity and response. So as we're putting patients on coverage for food and coverage for hyperglycemia, we're going to look at their blood sugars and make some adjustments. So let's take a look at this patient. This is their dinner, what they're going to eat, and then this is their carbohydrate ratio. So this person just counts up how much they're going to eat as far as carbs for dinner. So lemon chicken is a protein, no carbs. 1 cup of rice pilaf, for every 1/3 cup of rice, it's 15 grams. That's 45 grams. Asparagus is pretty much free, and then dinner roll is 15 grams. So there's 60 grams of carbs. So she could just divide in her head, well, I take 1 unit for every 15, so 60 divided by 15 is four units of insulin, or she might have a chart that looks like this. But here we have a little dilemma. Her blood sugar is 165. So she's going to eat the 60 grams of carbs. She'll take 4 units for that, but does she need any additional insulin to cover for hyperglycemia? And that would be, this is a prandial coverage or carbohydrate coverage, and now we need to look at a correction scale. But before we go on to the correction scale, let's do a poll question. Patient injects insulin and takes 1 unit Novolog for every 10 grams of carb. Meal is 1 cup of rice, barbecued steak, a small banana, and sugar-free iced tea. The blood glucose is 98. Based on that, how much insulin would she need? 8 units to cover this meal, 7.2 units, 6 units, or 5 units. Let me go ahead and open the poll and launch it. Okay, good job, everyone. Thank you. Okay, take one more second. Okay, I'm going to close the poll. Thank you so much. Oh, shoot. You know what? Thanks, Melissa. There's somebody has a line open. If you're listening to me and you can hear me right now, can you make sure that your phone is on mute? Because there is some background noise right now. So if you could just take a minute to mute your phone, that would be really terrific. So thank you very much. All right, patient injects insulin, takes 1 unit of Novolog for 10 grams of carb. Here's her meal, and this SF stands for sugar-free iced tea. What are we going to give her? So let me just do this together. So 1 cup of rice is 45 grams of carbohydrate. A small banana is 15 grams, so the total is 60 grams. She takes 1 unit of insulin for every 10. So that means 60 grams divided by 10 is 6 units. That's how you do it. And so I can see some of you chose 5 units because that's 60 grams. Well, I'm not sure. I was thinking 60 divided by 15, but that still is, yeah, that's not 5, so I'm not sure. But let me just share your results here. And some of you chose 8 units. Some of you chose 7.2. Most of you chose 6 units, about half of you, and some of you chose 5 units. So just to clarify, what do you need to know to succeed at this? Well, number one, you need to know what is one serving of starch and what does it translate to in grams of carb. That's number one thing. And on your resource page, I have a whole list of the exchanges where you can be familiar with what is one serving. And in the exam, they will have questions like this. Like they'll give you a certain amount of food and they'll say calculate how much insulin that patient needs, and they'll give you the carbohydrate ratio too, like one unit for every 10 grams of carb. So you would just need to calculate this out. So be familiar with common serving sizes of carbohydrate, very important. And then add those up and divide and make sure you really pay attention to 1 unit for how many grams of carb, and this is 10. So 60 grams divided by 10 is 6 units. Great job, everyone. And you know what you can do? If I'm going to try and put a lot of questions like that in your online university so you can get a lot of practice. But you could also make up some questions yourself and just experiment with answers. Of course, you'd have to figure out the right answer, but I would just practice adding stuff up, like asking yourself, oh, if they're going to eat this, how many grams of carb is it? And then making sure that you're familiar with that serving size. So adjusting bolus and correction doses, carbohydrate to insulin ratios based on 3 questions before a meal. How much carbohydrate am I going to eat? What is my insulin dose for this amount of carbohydrate? And should I lower the dose because I'm going to be very active, or I've been recently active, or my blood sugar is too low? So now we're getting into adjusting for food and we're going to add on for a correction bolus. So for the correction bolus, we're going to subtract 1 unit if the blood sugar is less than 70. This is really important. So if I'm about to eat a meal and my blood sugar is 69, I'm going to take out 1 unit of insulin because I don't want to overdose myself on insulin or give more than I need. So for the exam, they would give you a scale like this. They're not going to make you guess. They'll give you a scale and a patient situation, and so that you have to identify what insulin addition or adjustments would be made based on the scale. So this is not a sliding scale. This is a correction bolus. You add it on to their prandial, to their food. In this situation, she's getting 1 unit for every 50 above 150. So here's the scale she's using. So when she gets to 151, she adds 1 unit, 201, she adds 2, and so forth. So let's just do another one. This is a pretty standard and easy scale, but I'm going to shake it up a little bit. Bob's correction scale is 1 unit for every 30. He takes 1 unit of insulin for every 30 above his target of 120. His blood sugar right now is 210. How much correction insulin does Bob need to get his blood sugar to target of 120? Does he need 2.5 units? Does he need 3 units? Does he need to count his carbs first? Or does it depend on his activity level? Hi, thanks, Sally. We're still having trouble hearing. So if anybody out there is listening and they're talking, if you could mute your phone, that would be really great because we're still hearing background conversations. That would be really excellent. Thank you. Okay, Joan, thank you. Hang on one second. Okay, so work on this poll question. I'm going to do a little problem solving for a second. Okay, thanks everyone. We're working on the problem. Okay, we're gonna see if we can get a hold of Lainey and get her to put her phone on mute. Okay, so let me go ahead and close the poll and share your responses. One second, I'm just gonna text my colleague here. All right, thanks for your patience, everyone. It's a, technical interventions. It is diabetes related. Oh, it is? Okay, good. Well, at least it's diabetes related, whoever's talking. Okay, let's get back to our little project here. So the patient's target is 120, they're 210. How much correction insulin if he takes 1 unit for every 30? So I'm going to share your results. I'm sorry if I've already done this, but 8% of you said 2.5, 83% said 3 units, and 8% said C. They need to count their carbs first. So the B's are right, and let me show you why the B's are right. So his blood sugar is 210. His target is 120. He's 90 over target. He takes 1 unit for every 30 above his target. He's 90 above target divided by 30. He takes 1 unit for every 30, means 3 units of correction. Some of you, we could say, well, yeah, he should count his carbs first, but that's really not what the question is asking. It's saying, how much correction insulin does he need? So if you chose that, yes, go, Daddy. Oh, hang on one second. I'm sorry, you guys. So 3 units is the right answer. Now, if you didn't get that right, that's okay. It's just giving you feedback, as we always say. So let's keep going since we're a little bit behind the time here. Okay, type 1 in a teen. Cindy is trying to carb count and adjust her insulin, but is still having trouble. She weighs 60 kilograms. So based on this, what's her daily dose of insulin? 60 kilograms. 60 times 0.5. All right, we always do that quick calculation. She needs about 30 units a day of insulin. 30 units, but we divide it half basal, half bolus. So half of 30 is 15 units. Half of 30 is 15 units, so that's her basal dose. But now let's think about her bolus dose. She doesn't do it like what we've been talking about. She has a custom dose based on a few things. Number one, she has a custom bolus dose based on her pre-meal target. Her pre-meal target is 120. Her post-meal target is less than 180. Here's her carb ratio. She takes 1 unit for every 15 grams of carbohydrate. And she has a hypercorrection factor, 1 unit for every 55 above goal. Now, in the exam, they're going to give you a scenario just like this, and then they're going to give you case studies based on it. And they might even throw in something like, she uses Humalog and the 1700 rule. So what is the 1700 rule? Well, it's an algorithm to determine insulin sensitivity. So what you do on this rule is you take 1700 and you divide it by the total daily dose. Her total daily dose, we already know, was 60 times 0.5, 30 units a day. That gives us our insulin sensitivity. And for her, her insulin sensitivity is 56, or 1 unit drops her blood glucose 56 points. They won't ask you to calculate this, but they may say, based on the 1700 rule, she takes 1 unit for every 55 above target. They're going to use language like that. Get ready. Don't let it throw you off. This is the rule and how it's calculated out. They won't ask you to do this math. But we do know now, and you can use this for your patients too. You could, you know, divide their total insulin dose by 1700 to see what their insulin sensitivity is. We do know that 1 unit drops her blood sugar 56 points. So we just made a little chart for Cindy. We said if her blood sugar is less than 70, subtract 1 unit. Her target is 120, so she's trying to stay 70 to 120. That's her own unique specific target. If she's in that range, we're going to add 0 units. But if she's at 120 or above, 120 to 175, we're going to add 1 unit, 176 to 232 units. And you could say, well, it said 1 for every 56. Well, we just rounded it to 55 for easier math. That's how we got it. So anyways, this is the correction bolus for Cindy. So we're going to make charts like this for patients so that they don't have to use math, and a lot of times, you know, in their pumps, it automatically does it for them. But we want to know how to do it in our head as a backup plan. So let's just do one together. Before Cindy's blood glucose before lunch is 285. She plans to eat 45 grams of carbohydrate. We know her target is 120, and she's at 285. So she's 165 over her blood glucose target. We know she takes 1 unit for every 55 above target. So if you take 165, which is how much she's over target, divided by 55, that means she needs 3 units of insulin to get her blood sugars to target. Now for her carbs, she's going to eat 45 grams. Her ratio is 1 to 15. So 45 grams divided by 15 is 3 units. So she needs 3 units of bolus to correct to target. And she needs 3 units of bolus to cover carbs in her meal for a total adjusted dose of 6 units of Humalog insulin. That's how she figures it out. So now I want you to try one. You want to adjust Cindy's bolus insulin with ratios. Her before blood sugar lunch is 230. She plans to eat 60 grams of carbohydrate. What is her total adjusted insulin dose? I left this formula for you. You can go ahead and figure it, you know, use that to help you calculate it out. But what would be her total adjusted dose? Is the person on the line quieter now? Oh, good. Thanks, Melissa. Oh, geez. You never know what's going to happen on a webcast. Okay. What is her total adjusted insulin dose? I'm going to go ahead and launch this as a poll. Is it 4 units? Is it 5 units? Is it 6 units? Or is it 3 units? Okay. We'll take a few more seconds. They might give you a question like this. This will be one of the harder questions, but you just want to be ready for it if they do give you one like this. So have your, you know, your pencil with you and just be present. When you see the math problems, just, oh yeah, I can do that. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and close this and show you what you all chose. So 0% of you chose 4 units. Some of you chose 5 units, but the overwhelming majority of you chose 6 units. And that is the right answer. So let's go over that together on the next slide. And so her blood sugar right now is 230. We know her target is 120. So if you take 230 minus her target is 110, she's 110 over target. She takes 1 unit for every 55 above target, so that's 2 units. She's going to eat 60 grams of carb, and she takes 1 unit for every 15, so that's 4 units to cover carbs. So 2 plus 4 equals 6 units of Humalog. So great job. Most of you got that right. And, you know, it just takes practice in getting comfortable with this information. So great job, team. How much insulin is needed in this situation? Her morning blood sugar is 173, and this is what she's going to eat for breakfast. Cold pizza, half a cup of applesauce.
You have to right-click on Lainey's name and put mute.
Oh, thank you. Okay, she's got lunch, blood glucose of 69, and here's what she's going to eat. And then here's, you can read through this. I'm just going to work on a little technological problem here. Okay. And then 2 hours after lunch, she ran track. Before dinner, her blood glucose is 98, and she had a cheeseburger, some fries, chocolate chip cookies, and at bedtime her blood glucose was 173. So my question to you is, how much insulin does she need in this situation? And this is our same gal. She takes 1 unit for every 15 grams of carbohydrate, and that 1 unit for every 55 above target. So I don't have a poll question for this, but I want to do this together with all of you, because this is, it's not going to be on the exam like this, obviously, but what I'm trying to do is just, you know, share with us how challenging this is to figure out what, how much carbohydrate this person is eating and how much insulin to take. I mean, people with diabetes have to try and do this all the time, every day, and it's really challenging. So her morning blood glucose is 173, and she's going to, you know, have this pizza and a half cup of applesauce, and I just guesstimated that it was 45 grams, and then, oops, and that's what Cindy would do too. She took 3 units for that 45 grams. Her blood sugar was 173, so based on her little scale, she takes 1 extra unit for hyperglycemia for a total of 4 units. But look what happened to her lunch blood sugar. It went down to 69. So what does that tell us? That tells us maybe she gave more insulin than she felt than was needed. And so her blood sugars came down too low. This is a teaching opportunity to say, well, maybe let's go over carb counting again, or let's look at your ratio, because that was a little bit too much insulin. Now, at lunch, she ate all of this, and I just calculated maybe about 60 grams of carb. She would need 4 units for that. And then we take away 1 unit since her blood sugar was 69. So she only takes 3 units to get her blood sugars to target. And then you can see 2 hours after lunch, if you remember, her post-meal blood glucose is less than 180. It's 148, right on track. And she actually ran track with that blood sugar. And look what happened to before dinner. Her before dinner blood sugar is right where it needs to be, at 98. And so she doesn't have to take any correction. She just covers her carbohydrate. So for this meal, I just calculated out 75 grams of carb, which would be about 5 units. And then her bedtime blood sugar is 173. Her target's less than 180, so she's right on. And then she takes a 15 units of Lantus. She takes no correction. So this was just kind of to point out, you know, this is a really challenging to figure out how much carbs you're eating, how much insulin to give. But this is kind of how we're thinking when we look at people with diabetes on intensive insulin therapy, their carbs, hyperglycemia treatment, and where we're trying to get. Let's just take a look at her one more time. This is the same gal. Her carb ratio is 1 to 15. Her target is 120. She takes one unit for every 55 above target. So at breakfast, this is a pre-meal blood sugar. She eats 30 grams of carbohydrate. So to cover that, she takes one unit for every 15 grams. She took two units of Humalog. How did her lunch come in? Her target is 120, so it's a little bit higher than she'd like it. So now we just have to make sure, you know, she was counting her carbs right and just go over that with her. For lunch, she takes she's eating 75 grams of carb. If you're doing one for 15, that's five units to cover the 75 grams. Plus, she was a little bit elevated, so she took six units of Humalog. And how did her pre-dinner come in? Pre-dinner came in pretty close to target, 120. There it is, looking beautiful. She ate 60 grams of carb. She calculated. She took five units to cover that. Nothing for correction. She came in at 69 at bedtime. So a little bit below target. So she ate an extra 15 grams of carbohydrate and to get that blood sugar back up. But she still took her glargine, which is exactly what she should do. Now we have a pre and a post. So here before meals, she's 143. She's going to eat 5 grams of carbs. So now she has a decision to make. Do I just cover for the carbs or do I give one extra for hyperglycemia? She's really close there. She just decides to give the 3 units and she checks her blood sugar 2 hours after. It's 184, a little bit above her target. But okay. At lunch, her blood sugar was 122. She eats 60 grams. She gives 4 units of Humalog. And look where she comes in post-lunch, right on target. But what happened here at dinner time? A little bit elevated, so maybe she had a snack or something here. But to cover that, her carbs, 3 units, and hyperglycemia, she took 5. And so this is just an example of looking at patterns and understanding how people with diabetes would need to fine-tune their insulin regimen, even after they have formulas to use. So just kind of, you might be asking, well, how is this relevant for the exam? They might give you like a picture like this, you know, showing you this is the blood sugars, this is the insulin they're taking, and then they might ask you questions relevant to this. I don't know what they would ask exactly, but what would you focus on during your teaching session with Cindy? And they might say something like A, carbohydrate counting, B, adjusting your correction scale. They might give you questions like that. So you just want to be familiar with looking at patterns and at targets and knowing what the targets are for diabetes care. Let's do another poll question. Let's see, somebody has a question for me. Sally wants to know, shouldn't she have taken 4 units at day one dinner? Yeah, that's a really good point. Day one dinner, 60 grams of carb. She should. Thank you for pointing that out. She should have taken 4 units to cover her carb. Her blood sugar is just a little bit above target. But remember, we said if she's 120 or above, she adds a one extra unit of correction scale. So for her, that was right, but it was a judgment call on her part. She was saying, should I take the one extra unit or shouldn't I? Because she was so close. But she decided, yeah, I'll take the extra unit. And you can see that was just too much for her. But according to her chart, she does take an extra unit for blood glucose above 120. Yeah, good question. Okay. Paul has had type 1 diabetes for 40 years and injects insulin 4 times a day. Which of the following is important to assess? A, does he clean his needle before he reuses it? B, is he wiping his skin thoroughly with alcohol before injection? D, does he bend his needle before placing it in the trash? Or D, is he rotating sites? What's the right answer here? All right. Let me go ahead and launch this poll. Okay, 86% of you have voted. Thanks a lot, guys. Okay, I'm going to close this. Okay, you guys, as usual, are on fire. 100% of you chose the right answer. So let me just go over a few of these. As far as cleaning needles and reusing them, generally we say that we don't want to reuse needles. We just want to use them once. We're not worried about infection. We're really worried about the needle getting duller. Is he wiping his skin thoroughly with alcohol before injection? You guys didn't choose that. Great job. We used to say, you know, clean with alcohol. We do that in the hospital, but in the outpatient setting, where we don't really worry about that too much. Does he bend his needle before placing it in the trash? As you know, needles are hazardous waste, so we don't put them in the trash. And is he rotating sides is exactly the right answer. So D is the right answer, and 100% of you chose that. And the reason I actually wrote that test question is because I had a gentleman come in to see me, that exact situation, and I said, can I look at your belly? And I touched his belly, and you could see all of his injection site where he had been injecting was this very limited space on his belly, and there was a buildup of scar tissue. And, you know, hypertrophy of the tissue. So all the insulin was bunched up in those two little pouches on his belly. And so, I just like to touch people's bellies where they inject to feel what's happening in them. It's really important, especially people who are very, I'm injecting a lot of times a day. And so when I had him actually inject in other locations, because I instructed him and I said, you can use the entire tire for injecting. He actually had some low blood sugars and because now his insulin was really being absorbed. So I did warn him about that. I said, if you notice your blood sugar is going low when you rotate and inject in different sites, we may need to adjust your insulin down. And sure enough, we almost had to cut it by one third because of that. So really look at patients' injection sites. So important. And we don't toss, you know, in the trash because of the sanitary workers can get poked by the needles and then they have to get tested for HIV, hepatitis, and so forth. It's a really big problem. So make sure they inject their bolus insulin with meals. Basal once to twice daily. If it's Lantus once a day is fine. Stay 1 inch away from previous site. Don't reuse Ultrafine. Keep unopened insulin in the refrigerator, and when you take it out at room temperature, it's good for 28 days. Look for hypertrophy. That was the other part of that sentence, or patients injecting in the same spot over time. Really important to review our patient's ability to withdraw and inject the insulin, making sure they can do it safely, and they know which is their basal and which is their bolus. And we want to let patients know that the side effects of insulin do include hypoglycemia and weight gain. And if they're on insulin pens, make sure they know about priming the needle to make sure an accurate dose is given and they're not getting air shots. And for any patient, if they're having leakage after injection, we really do encourage them to hold the needle in for 5 seconds after injection, and that will help the insulin absorb more. So for patients on pens or patients with any leakage, just hold the insulin needle in for 5 seconds after injection. And if you have 70-30 insulin, you really need to make sure to roll it, the pens or the vials, to mix the ingredients together. Otherwise, they will separate out, and you may not get the right relationship of basal to bolus with that injection. Okay, so this is information looking for hazardous waste listing in your city or county. Here's a 1-800 number you can call. But BD does offer a Sharps container that you can send back by mail for patients who just don't have any place to dispose of their waste. So this is a nice thing. Or there's also a safe clip where patients can put their insulin needle into the safety clip and it clips it off and holds a year's worth of supply of insulin needles in this little device. You can throw the barrel in the trash and this just needs to be disposed of properly. On the exam, there are going to be questions on insulin pump therapy. Now, insulin pump therapy is, you know, being utilized more and more by patients with type 1 and also patients with type 2. And so there's it's called the AADE white pages on insulin pump therapy. I've put that in your list of reading materials. I would definitely read it. It's about 4 pages long, but it has a lot of good information. There are going to be questions on the exam about the pump. They're not high-level questions. They're just basic questions that all of us should know, even if we don't specialize in insulin pump administration. So that would be something really important to take a look at. And then kind of based on that, which of the following is a lifestyle indication for insulin pump use? Like, who should we recommend insulin pumps for? People with A, a stable schedule, B, limited travel, C, need for structure, or D, is it advisable for people with varied work shifts? I'm going to go ahead and launch this poll and see what you come up with. All right. Thanks for voting, everybody. And some of you might work with pumps a lot, and some of you, you know, may not really work with pumps that much. So Sally asked a really great question. She said, why don't we see more patients with, I'm going to go ahead and close this poll. Thanks for voting, everybody. Sally says, why don't we see more people with type 2 diabetes on insulin pumps? They're injecting 4 times a day. I totally agree with you. And I've read a few studies recently on patients with type 2 on insulin pumps. They have great outcomes. They need a lot less insulin, and it helps to mitigate weight gain. So I just think one of the main barriers for using insulin pumps with type 2s is that they require a lot of insulin. And so sometimes you would have to change the pump and the insertion site so frequently. But now they're coming out with pumps that have a larger insulin capacity so that patients with type 2 could benefit from pump therapy also. So it's exciting, but I think we underutilize insulin for our type 2s and insulin pump for our type 2s. So that's a great thing to keep in mind. Anyways, I just want to go over this. So let me share your results. Which of the following is a lifestyle indication for insulin pump use? And 36% of you chose stable schedule. And actually, I did put that in as a juicy answer. I was kind of luring you in. And that's what the test writers are going to do. They're going to really put in some answers that are appealing and that you want to choose, but really think through and see, is this the best answer? Because as it turns out, insulin pumps are really great for people with a crazy schedule. Because what you can do, since insulin pumps, you give a basal rate that is constantly delivered, and you can adjust during different time frames. But the basal rate would be anywhere from 0.3 to maybe 1 unit an hour. And that's what our pancreas does. It releases about 0.5 units of insulin per hour. So you can set a varied basal rate throughout the day. You can adjust that. But also, with the insulin pump, you don't have to eat at a standard time. Because you have that basal insulin continuously rolling through, you just need to bolus when you're about to eat. So with the insulin pump, it's great for people who don't have a structured life, who have an unstable schedule, who are traveling, and especially D, who work varied work shifts. What if a person works nights and then days and then, you know, what, afternoon shift? It's really hard to adjust insulin using injections. A pump is perfectly suited for that. So insulin pumps allow a lot of flexibility and are really designed for people with lifestyles that are not stable and predictable. And so how would you know the answer to this? Well, of course, we're going to pull on our common sense, but also if you read that white paper, it will talk about indications for pump therapy, and you'll see that's where I got this question from, who was indicated for it, and some other really important information. So thanks, you guys. Hey, since we had so much fun with our other poll question like this, let's do another one. Joan is on an insulin pump. Oh, interesting. She takes 1 unit Humalog for 10 grams of carb. So I'm giving you 10 grams for easy math because I love you guys. Her meal is 1 small potato, barbecue chicken, 1 cup of regular milk, 1 cup of Jell-O, and 1/3 cup of beans. Her blood glucose is 118. How much insulin does Joan need to cover this meal? So I'm just looking at her carb coverage. Is it A, 4.7? Is it B, 6 units? Is it C, 7 units, or is it D, 5.7 units? So let me go ahead and launch that and see what you all come up with. Okay, most of you have voted. Thank you, everyone. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and close this poll and spend some time going over it with all of you. Thank you so much. I was talking earlier, before this program started about vulnerability. And we are being very vulnerable as adults learning this new information we're not familiar or comfortable with. Some of you may be really comfortable with this and it's like, this is super easy, but for a lot of us, this is new information, we're not familiar, we've never learned about it, and it takes a lot of risk. You know, even just voting, I'm sure, is difficult sometimes because you're not sure of the answer. So I really appreciate you willing to take this risk and come and join this program and be a part of this. And just remember, if you don't learn it, you get the opportunity to learn something new, which is really cool. So I always learn stuff when I write these programs. I'm always, as I've mentioned before, if you want to learn this material the best, teach it to somebody. So if you can put together a little mini show on diabetes or carb counting, you will learn it in a much different way, an effective way, and that really helps people a lot. Okay. So getting back to my talk here, Joan is on a pump. She takes 1 unit for 10 grams. Meal is one small potato. So the number one thing I'm asking of you right now is, do you know your exchange list? So if you're a dietitian, you're like, oh, man, this is super easy. This is, you know, just I know this stuff like the back of my hand. But for those of us who maybe are not familiar with the exchange list or carb counting as much, this is an adventure for us. So in your resource list, as I've mentioned, I've put an exchange list in there. You might want to just look at that and start getting familiar with common foods, because on the exam, they will want you to know the carbohydrate content of common foods. So let's just take a look at this. One small potato is how many grams of carb? It's 15 grams. One cup of barbecue chicken, how many grams? That's nothing. We consider that a protein. The barbecue sauce doesn't really count. It's, it's part in a condiment category, kind of. One cup of regular milk is how many grams of carb? So this is important. You need to know starchy vegetables and you need to know milk. Milk is 12 grams of carbohydrate. So now we have 15 plus 12. And then one cup of Jell-O. One cup of Jell-O is 30 grams of carbohydrate. One cup of Jell-O is 30 grams. Okay, let's see what else I have. 1/3 cup of beans is 15 grams. So how much insulin does this person need? So now I'm going to have to do some quick mathematical adjustments to my slide. So Beverly made a mistake. One small potato is 15 grams. One cup of regular milk is 12 grams. One cup of Jell-O is 30 grams. So I stand corrected. 1/3 cup of beans is 15 grams. So I added this up incorrectly. I don't even know if the right answer is on your slide. So, let's see what this is. It's 30 plus 60 plus 12 is 72 grams. Is that what you all got? Can you all see my slide still? Let me make sure you all can see me. Yes, Ellen Wells said it should be 72. So look what I'm going to do right now. So it's 72 grams divided by 10 equals 7.2 units of insulin. So if you chose 7, you were the closest. So let me just share this with all of you. Okay, so this is what you all chose. So there was no right answer on that, but the closest answer was 7 units. So I apologize for that. I'm going to close that poll again. I just, for some reason, I'm going to hide this. I thought I had put half a cup of Jell-O, so I apologize. But so that's how you do it. You say one small potato is 15 grams, a cup of milk is 12, a cup of Jell-O is 30 grams, and then a third of a cup of beans is 15. The total is 72 grams. 72 grams divided by 10 is 7.2 units of insulin. Now you may say, why don't you just say 7 units of insulin? I don't say 7 because she's on a pump. If you're on an insulin pump, you can take the 0.2 because on a pump, they can do 7.1, 7.2. They can go onto these smaller increments, the tenth of a unit increment. If you're on an insulin needle, you can't do 7.2 units. So for example, if it said Joan is on, takes insulin injections, the right answer would have been 7, but since she's on a pump, she can take 7.2. So I hope I didn't confuse anyone. You can see that even a seasoned diabetes educators make mistakes. So I am humbled before you right now. Okay, so I hope that's clear. If there's any other questions afterward, let me know. Let's see if I got this one right. Poll question 17. Mary takes 6 units of Lispro Humalog before dinner. Which blood glucose result reflects it was the right dose? So we did this one last time, but I just did a kind of different version. Mary takes 6 units of Lispro before dinner. Which blood glucose reflects that it was the right dose? Was it before breakfast of 97? Is it 1 hour post-dinner of 189? Is it before dinner blood glucose of 102? Is it 2 hour post-dinner blood glucose of 178? What tells us it was the right dose? Okay, thanks everyone. Okay, most of you have voted. Take one more second to vote. And I'm going to go ahead and close the poll. Thank you. Okay. So I'm going to share the results here with all of you. So Mary takes 6 units of Humalog before dinner. Which blood glucose result reflects it was the right dose? So before dinner, she takes 6 units. So I'm going to be looking for a post-dinner blood sugar because I know Lispro or Humalog is a bolus insulin, and I know the post-dinner blood sugar is going to reflect its efficacy. So nobody chose A, before breakfast blood sugar of 97, great job. Somebody chose B, 1 hour post-breakfast of 189. So that would not be the right answer because we need to look at a post-dinner. And so maybe someone chose this because they read breakfast instead of dinner. So really read the words carefully in the question. I would just say it's easy to read quickly through the words, but just read the questions really carefully so you don't miss keywords like that. So I think that's what happened with the B's. And then C said before dinner blood glucose of 102. Okay, that's another juicy answer. But she takes the 6 units of Lispro before dinner. How do we know it was the right dose? C is not the right answer because this C answer tells us how well her lunch insulin worked. It tells us her lunch insulin was the right dose because before dinner was 102. So the right answer is what 85% of you chose is D, a 2 hour post-dinner of 178. The target for after dinner is less than 180, and she's right there. So that would tell us that that was the right amount of Lispro. So D is the right answer. Good job, everyone. Okay. So let me keep, oh, that's all we have for today. Let me see if I have any other poll questions to share with you. I think that's it. So this is a little bit shorter version. This is a, I think we were on the online together for 1 hour and 15 minutes. But it's just kind of a continuation of last week's presentation to kind of give us more practice and experience doing carb counting, correction scales, and insulin management. So I thank you for joining me, and I thank you so much for your patience and your willingness to stick with it through a territory that may be a little bit less familiar to you. As always, I will stay afterward to answer any additional questions. There might be a short pause where my audio goes out and then comes back in, but I will still be here. So thank you, everyone, for joining us, and we will see you on Monday for our medication management webcast. I'm looking forward to that, and we should have the handouts up by later today. That's my goal. So we'll let you know when they're ready. Have a great weekend, everybody, and study hard. Okay, thanks a lot. This is Beverly Tomasian signing off.